Yeah, so I've been working with Savannah at the Clay Center on a new project for their collaboration thing. We're making astronaut plates.
Go figure. I wonder why.
It wasn't even my idea, but I think it's cool.
Well, you know, since you brought it up, let's start right there. There's a lot of astronauts in your work. How come?
Oh, my gosh. I kind of stumbled on that back in, like, 2007. I don't know where it came from. I think I was dealing with just ideas of feeling like a solitary observer, like looking outside of the world, looking in. And I came up with that symbol of, like, the astronaut who's just out in space. Like, there's only a few human beings off of the planet at the time, and to look back on the Earth and know that, like, 99.999% of humanity is back there. It's kind of a lonely feeling, I guess. And I think over time that idea has changed for me, not being as an observer, but more of a participant, and seeing that, I don't know, this astronaut symbol is also like the best of who we are as human beings. It's been a cool thing to work with. Just there's so much there from that first experience of being the observer, being this like isolated, solitary figure, but also being like the best that we are, going into space, exploring the universe. It's been really fun for me.
Wow. So that sounds like a whole. It's not like two sides of a coin. It's this and it's that. It's not this or that.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I think that's coming through in a lot of work. Just things aren't maybe the and or. I mean, it's not just the or thing anymore. It's finding so many similarities between everything and just keep going and going and going. Pretty
exciting. Well, we're talking, Brian, because you have an exhibition showing right now at the Launchpad. It's called Self-Reflected Universe. So I think I know now, having just listened to you, what exactly that means. But maybe you could amplify that a little bit. Self-Reflected Universe.
Sure. I came up with the idea for this show back in the fall of 2018. All the proposals that go through the Carbondale Art Gallery are due like May for the previous year, or for the next year, I guess, the following year. So I was coming up with this idea of a self-reflected universe kind of being like, I don't know, like the me and you is also the you that is in me kind of idea. We're all connected on some level, I feel like, and over the past 2 years, that idea has kind of shifted. And not shifted, but evolved, I guess, into more like this personal journey that I've been on. And so it was going to be like more of other people and showing. I had a series of portraits that I did on cut-up panels, and their faces kind of blended into the universe, and there was like a galaxy going on behind there because we're all made of the stardust, like we've always heard, and like the basic atoms in our bodies are the same atoms that are made when a star collapses. And that kind of connection that is between us all has been interesting to me, and has also given me a lot of, I don't know, strength and purpose and, I don't know, that kind of thing going forward. So it did kind of evolve from there, and I guess we can talk about what happened in between.
Well, yeah, you say in your artist statement on the Carbondale Arts website, I've experienced some uniquely personal life-changing events over the past 2 years relating to a small benign growth near the base of my brain, which has affected my body in many ways. Tell me about that, and tell me about how that has affected your art.
Yeah, I grew up without any kind of doctors in my life, and so it was kind of a big surprise in some ways not, after doing some blood tests, because I kept getting sick for some reason, they discovered this thing in my brain and it's like wrapped around the pituitary gland, cutting off like all kinds of hormones to my body. And I think that was the main reason I was getting sick all the time. The testosterone does a lot of things to the body, and one of them is helping with your immune system. Even women have a big number of testosterone, and all of my charts were reading like almost zero.
Really?
Yeah, and you know, it also helps with bone density and all kinds of things you don't even think about, and especially I wouldn't think about because I wasn't even in that world before. So over time, going back to different doctors and figuring out what to do, you know, I came up with a plan to handle it. And through all of that, just kind of trying to embrace who I am at the same time as, like, embracing who I am, like, changing into. It's a crazy experience to go through puberty when you're 38 years old.
Yes, it is. Tell
me something,
more.
Yeah. I mean, I knew there was something going on back in the day when I was a teenager and going through college, like something's not right. But the way that we were raised, it wasn't anything we would question. So, you know, this is just how you are, and things will figure themselves out. But fortunately, we did take some steps recently. And so just exploring through doctors and also going through therapy. Like, I've been going to therapy like once a month the past year. And then I think the first time I went, it was like once a week because there was so much to process. And trying to figure out like who I am and who am I going to change, who like I am, like fundamentally going through this change. You hear stories about like testosterone just turning you into this like Hulk monster. And I've always been sort of like this introverted, peaceable person making art in my studio. And so I wasn't sure what that would do. And so in the show, this exhibition, you'll kind of see this journey that I went through over the course of probably 2.5 years or so, from just feeling like my world was falling apart because everything was up in the air, like, not only my physical body, but like my spiritual relationship to everything that I had grown up thinking about. And then, you know, family and friends and relationships and that kind of stuff too. So that's kind of where I started with the show anyway.
So that explains the headless astronaut juggling 9 different heads in the astronaut helmet and your face in every one of them. That explains
right.
It.
I know. I guess if you didn't know what was happening in my personal like journey, then you just think it's a pretty narcissistic show because it's just my face over and over. But there was something that I was finding in this self-reflective thing. It's like a mirror. You know, you look in a mirror and you see yourself, but there's also something you can see in other people when you look in their face or a photo of them. Like, you'll recognize an emotion or an experience they're going through. And so I think there is a connection there, some kind of empathy or I don't know what to call it. That's there with, I think, everybody. Hopefully everybody feels that kind of emotion and can identify and, you know, latch on to what people are going through. And so I'm hoping that's what people grasp in this show is, you know, this is my experience, but I'm sure they're traumatic things that people have been through that they could identify with or at least in some way relate to it. So hopefully that's happening. I haven't had a lot of conversations with people because we can only have 10 people in the gallery at the time.
Right. Well, right next to that headless astronaut. Well, first, let's talk a little more about that. Each of those 9 heads is also I don't know how you did it. Did you use ball bearings or something? But you can actually rotate each of those heads 360 mm-hmm. degrees, can't you?
Yeah, I mounted little like turntable, like Lazy Susan things on the back of them, and so they spin around pretty freely. And I think I like interactive art. Just I try and get away from just like the formal, always the formal rectangle square format. And in this way, I mean, with astronauts anyway, it's kind of fun to have them floating around in space in front of you. But this way, like with a juggler, so they're kind of like the balls he's juggling in the air, you know, flipping around as they do. Uh-huh. And so I thought that would just be an extra fun thing to have, be interactive. But
the expressions on the on your faces in those nine of them, aren't there? Yeah. You know, say a lot. Some of them are very almost pensive. Some of them are very resolute, like Captain Kirk, you know, boldly going where no one has gone before.
That's what it felt like.
So I guess that's reflective of, God, it must have been a real turbulent emotional time. And that sort of encapsulates all that very well.
Thanks. Yeah. I feel like that is the feeling when you're juggling who you are, when everything's kind of been taken away and you're just trying to make it through each day and each week, step by step. And also the nine heads kind of correlate. There's a pattern inside of that circle of the heads that refers to the Enneagram, which is like a personality type sort of system. But I've been exposed to that for the past maybe 10 years, but I found it super helpful as a tool just to learn about myself and learn about other people around me, friends and family, and just see and my coworkers and just see, you know, where we connect and how we relate to each other. It's been really cool to learn about.
Huh. So what personality type are you?
Huh. I'm a number 6.
I
think you see yourself in all the numbers, so there's like a little bit of each number in you, but for me, the number 6 kind of came through for all the tests I'd taken.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, right right next to the astronaut juggling nine heads is another astronaut in a space helmet, which is you, of course, and it's called the crew compartment's breaking up. Boy, that's a pretty graphic thing. That's kind of scary. It's kind of a scary one.
Yeah, you know, when I'm making art, I come up with the title sometimes from music I'm listening to. So that title, The Crew Compartment is Breaking Up, is from a song called The Commander Talks Aloud, I think. It's by The Long Winters. You can look it up. It's based on the Columbia shuttle breaking up over Texas in 2003.
Oh.
And just listening to the song, he repeats that phrase, the crew compartment breaking up, over and over and over at the end of the song, and you kind of just get it, and you're like, oh my God, what these people must have gone through. And I felt like that's kind of how I was feeling, just being split apart from the inside out, because this thing, I don't know where your pituitary gland is, but it's like right at the base of your brain, like 2 or 3 inches behind your eyeballs. It's pretty much in the almost the center of your head.
So it's a
really hard to get to.
Third eye.
Right? I think the pineal gland is plant.
Okay.
This is the pituitary. It's more of the hormones, but it's really hard to get to. So when we were thinking about getting surgery, they just kind of opted out because it's there's too many things that can go wrong, I guess. And so that kind of pressure building up and just, you know, splitting apart the seams basically from the inside out. So yeah, what you'll see there is kind of like a dissection of my head, like straight down the middle,
yes,
top to bottom. And then you'll see like my brain and then the skull and then like some blood vessels and then my skin and my face and my hair. And then the helmet's also split in two. And then there's this shattered glass mirror flying through it, exploding.
Wow.
Yeah, it is kind of dramatic.
My head's exploding. My head's exploding. Wow,
and I don't usually make personal art like this. This is like way new for me, and especially showing it in front of a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
It was very therapeutic for me, and it's also very therapeutic to get to show it and get it kind of out of my head, so to speak. Yeah, I think just getting it onto the board, like onto the paper and or the board and the paint, and getting out of my brain feels really good.
And, you know, speaking as an audience member, looking at your work, what I get is that, well, I didn't know you that well before, but I was vaguely aware of some of your medical travails, and looking at these pictures just kind of clarified what it must have been for you. So mission accomplished.
Oh, that's good phrase there. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been really rewarding we had a great art talk at the opening on September 4th. And a lot of people came up to me afterwards and just were expressing their thoughts about things they'd gone through. And they didn't know what I had gone through, but appreciated the transparency, I guess. Being vulnerable in front of people is hard, but I think it helps other people open up too in the moment. Huh. And that was really special part of the evening.
I imagine the idea of making art on a regular basis, and you seem to be a pretty prolific artist, at least based on what I've seen online, and but I guess just the very act of making art for you is therapeutic, no matter what the subject matter is. Am I right?
Oh yeah, I think I feel like in school I heard my professor say that every piece of art you make, there's some kind of part of you that goes into it, so everything is a little bit autobiographical. Even if it's not like a self-portrait, it can be a landscape, but there's still a part of you, you know, there's a reason you chose to be there or pick that subject. And there is a reflection on you, and it's coming out on the paper through the paint or sculpture or whatever you're working on. The art can't be totally separated from the artist. And so there is that therapy, I think, that comes through. I've never done like a real art therapy session, but I can see how valuable it could be because, you know, a picture is worth 1,000 words, and I don't know how many words I would say in a therapy session, but probably close to that.
Uh-huh.
Probably more.
Well, the piece that you have next to the two astronauts is called, let's see here, It's No Better to Be Safe Than Sorry. I wonder if you could describe that for people. It's an arresting image.
Yeah, so this is another self-portrait, of course, and I have my hands up in kind of like the rock star pose on either side of my head. My hair is just crazy huge, like a rock star would be, and I have silver aviators on, and then I'm kind of sinking into this disc, this blue disc, almost like a vinyl record. I think that's what I actually based the image off of, just because the music is so strong when I make my art. And then underneath that, kind of sinking down beneath, like through it, is a reflection or like a mirror of a skull with the aviators on, fingers doing the same symbol, but kind of going down. So I'm kind of rising up, and it's kind of sinking further down. And yeah, I made that piece. These are all kind of based on sketches from my sketchbook where it kind of started everything, but I guess the initial sketch was based on this feeling I had once I decided to keep moving forward. I feel like there's a point at which this thing kind of, I mean, I was pretty depressed because once I realized what was happening and being told by all the doctors what was happening, it was not the best day of my life. And to know what I had been going through and what I faced in the near future was so daunting. But I realized that I could make a choice, I guess. I had the options to be who I am and embrace myself like wholeheartedly going forward, just no excuses and, you know, you only live once kind of attitude, I guess. And so here I am like rising up and making that choice kind of split in half from the skull that's going down. So I feel like that was that moment in time, and I wanted to feel like a rock star instead of, you know, 6 feet under the ground.
Well, that's what I was going to say, you know. And yet it's coming, it's rising out of that knowledge of death. So you're, it's one side, it's two sides of the same coin.
Yeah. And I don't know if you've ever seen like a scan of your brain before, but it's very, I don't know, kind of, for me, it was kind of a life-changing thing, just seeing what's inside your head. Like, you go through your day-to-day life just kind of doing your thing, and then it can all be taken away so quick. And to see what's going on in there is really breathtaking. All the things that your body can do and overcome day-to-day, it's pretty magnificent. So
your intimations of mortality ended up being hopeful.
So far.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still young. I we'll see what happens. I feel like part of the sixth Enneagram that we were talking about is this constant pendulum. That number goes back and forth between good and bad. It kind of sees both sides of the coin all the time. And so, you know, my perspective keeps changing every day.
Well, moving around the show, you have what's almost a traditional painting. It's the one about, let's see, I've got the title. Oh, I need the night to feed my dreams. Maybe the most traditional piece of art in the show, except for the blue paint tipping out of the picture mm-hmm. onto the wall. Yeah. So you're breaking the plane of that painting.
Yeah. Again, I get kind of tired of the rectangle square format of everything, so I had to break it a little bit just for fun. This one's about kind of being at peace with myself again. It's a dream, so I'm like upside down. I'm in my bed, and this dream is like spilling out of my head over the universe. And there's all these little things inside the dream, like Godzilla and the little prince on the little planet, asteroid. And I would say the stars, I made the little constellations going on in there. And those are based on... Oh, say again?
I was going to ask you what those constellations were. I think I noticed the Big Dipper.
Yeah, they're arranged from... I looked at the chart on November 1st, 2018, because that's the day we went to Denver to get the MRI, and they decided I didn't need to get surgery. And that was such a relief. And so I imagine that night I must have just had the best sleep of my life.
Yeah.
Just curled up. And so the stars on that painting are arranged from like the charts on that day or on that night. I don't think anyone would ever notice that, but a little inside protein.
Yeah, and the Godzilla with a beam of light coming out of his mouth.
I just wanted to pick a few things that I love and make art about, and there's a ukulele in there because I like playing ukulele, and just a bunch of, there's some planets in there from the Mountain Fair design I got to do last year. So,
and
it's like some feel-good art for me.
You know, I really kind of like the background. I mean, you've got the classic, well, it looks like it's something from the Hubble Space Telescope, you know, all sorts of swirls of color and clouds. And then if you really zero in on it, I started to see a lot of little stars, not in the constellations in the center of the frame, but also in both sides of that. One is darker blue and the other is more space dust color. But I saw a lot of little speckles. Did you make each one of those? Or did you drip or splatter? How did you get all those little tiny white dots in there?
Yeah, over time, making all these little space paintings here and there, I found the best way to make stars really fast is with a toothbrush.
Oh, so you put the paint on the toothbrush and you just
every night. Yeah. You just dip it in and use your thumb and spray it all over.
Oh,
and it's just like instant universe. You feel like a god or something. You're just like creating.
Well, isn't that the whole point of making art, is to feel godlike? I mean, isn't that, isn't it? I mean, no.
I mean, there is some kind of satisfaction of getting to make something that's in your head that no one else can see, and then all of a sudden it's there. I would say that it doesn't always 100% turn out like that, but
right.
The fact that you can alter your space through with your hands and your mind, and it's a pretty good drug, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. Huh. Okay, now the last part of the show, moving further, I've got the Carbondale Arts website open right now, and I'm looking at the show virtually, which is a really cool...
Oh, yeah, the virtual tour.
It's really cool, by the way. I don't know if that was your idea to do that, but boy, it's just really cool to have that, especially these days.
Yeah, it's a great feature. Yeah, there's so many people that don't feel comfortable going out into public spaces, so this gives everyone a chance to get to see the shows online.
Well, the piece we were just talking about is more of a traditional painting, and the other pieces that we started with were acrylic oil on panel and resin, but these 12 smaller pieces, what are they, a foot square, more or less, something like that? They're all watercolors.
Like 4x6 or so.
Oh, are they? Are they that small? Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So, how do you work in watercolor very often?
I do. I kind of flip between watercolor and acrylic a lot. And acrylic has been fun. I've kind of just picked that up in the last few years. But I feel like it's a little bit more time consuming. Watercolors, it's not as forgiving as acrylic, of course, because you can paint over things in acrylic, but there's some kind of immediacy with watercolor because you can blend really fast and it will react with the water and just go all over the page at one moment instead of using the brush for each little mark.
Okay.
So that's why I needed to have some smaller pieces to fill out the show, because I realized I was running out of time.
Okay.
We thought this show was going to be possibly postponed into next year, and when it wasn't, I suddenly realized I needed to get some work done. So luckily I had a sketchbook full of ideas, and if I'd had more time, I probably would have made each one of those, 3 foot in diameter. Since I didn't have the time, I was able to just make some quick watercolor studies of these things. They're all still based on song titles, just from music I've been listening to. And I did make a playlist on Spotify that people can look up. If you look up Self-Reflected Universe, there's 14 songs on there just for fun to listen to.
And each song correlates to each one of those little watercolor pieces.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah, so there's, they're all of me, of course. there's a theme, but some you can see, like my brain scan, and some you can see might relate to other pieces in the show, like the sketches that grew into the finished pieces. So I think it's kind of fun to see the process, because they are a little more sketchy, and you can kind of see where my head is at. Anyway.
Well, how does your artistic process work? Does it always start with a drawing? how does it progress from whatever you start with into these amazingly these pieces we've talked about? How does that work normally? What's your process?
Usually, it helps if I have like a show to work towards, like a theme, or to make some kind of body of work or a series. And so then I'll sit down with my sketchbook and just draw and write words, and I'll do some research if there's a word that keeps coming up, or if there's a symbol that I'm into, then maybe that's important to look up and kind of see what the history is, and any kind of background I can gather and better inform the work. I know I'm not going to be in front of the artwork all the time to explain everything. So it's not always important to, lay everything out. I want the work to speak for itself. Hopefully that happens when people see the work. It's hard to know.
Did you go to school for art?
I went to a liberal arts college, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. I just kept taking all the art classes. I signed up for the first, for one of the basic ones my freshman year, and just enjoyed it so much. We were going outside and painting, and that winter we did figure drawing, and that was a great challenge to draw the figure. I think that's about one of the hardest things to capture as an artist. I was so interested in it, and by the time my sophomore year ended, my advisor told me that I should probably major in it because I had enough credits almost to do it. So, I didn't have a plan. Like, I didn't know what to do with it afterwards. And I went back home. I'm from Dallas, and I was back at home for several years after school before moving out here. And I was making art there, but it wasn't, like, meaningful stuff. It was, like, still life and landscapes. And I ended up taking a class at a community college where the teacher was, giving the students ideas for content. And I had kind of touched on that in school, but suddenly that was where the astronaut came from one of those classes. And when I moved out here over 10 years ago, I just felt how creative the Valley was. There's so many talented people here and so many opportunities to show the work and get involved. And even in little ways here and there, like farmers markets and, mountain fair and all kinds of stuff. There's so many ways to show work. And I got excited to do that. And I think that's just taken me forward ever since.
Your description of your college career in art doesn't explain your facility for drawing. It's pretty obvious to me anyway. Did that come earlier in your life, or were you one of those kids that was always surrounded by art and encouraged to do it and had the materials at hand?
Yeah, I would say kind of both. The classic story of me as a young child is going from Texas to Colorado on camping trips with my family, and that's the long, long drive, but my parents would sit me back in the car and with a pad of paper and crayons, and I would just scribble around, and I guess one day my dad was back there and showed me you can actually draw characters from, like, Sesame Street, like Ernie and Bert, and he was drawing that, and I guess my mind was blown, and I figured out how to kind of scribble those characters. And then I think just growing up, there were art classes we got to take as kids. I took a lot of art in high school, and it's just something interesting to me. I don't know what exactly drew me to it, except I wasn't an athlete, and I wasn't, like, super smart. It was just a really good outlet for me, and my parents were pretty supportive of it. No one really told me what to do with it after college, but luckily no one dissuaded me, so that worked out.
Your previous art is known for its humor. There's not a lot of humor in this show, and now I see why after listening to you describe, what you've been going through the last several years. But I want to touch a little bit on that because it's really funny. Lots of pop culture references, T-Rexes and astronauts, mm-hmm. and, 7-Elevens, and what was the one? Right. It's getting real in the parking lot at City Market or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Painting of the old City Market parking lot. Yeah.
Yeah. So uh, I, I'm sure that's still a part of you, is that really great humor that's so easily seen in your art. And I understand why there's not a whole lot of it in this show. Do you think you'll move back to that a little bit or incorporate more of it into something a little different? Tell me about that.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, the humor is definitely still there, and thankfully, this change over the past 2 years hasn't, like, just drained me of any kind of, you know, optimism at all for life. And so there's definitely that spark of imagination and curiosity. I think for this show, it was just something I needed to do to just get out of my system, I guess. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to more projects in the future. I mean, I still like making meaningful work, and that's an interesting thing to try and balance with humor. But I think humor is meaningful, too, because it brings so much joy to people. And it's fun to, you know, see people's faces when they come and see the work. And I always feel good about, you know, seeing things from a different angle. I think I just get bored a lot with the art world, and I keep pushing myself for different ideas, and they always say think out of the box, and I guess that's what I try to do, just to try and push everything a little bit further and further, see different relationships between things that people haven't seen before.
Well, is that one reason why you love Meow Wolf?
I did put that in the artist statement.
Yes.
Yeah, that was probably one of the most incredible experiences. If you haven't been to Meow Wolf in Santa Fe, I know they're making a couple new ones in, like, Las Vegas and I think Denver, too.
Denver, yeah.
But that's probably not coming for a little bit longer now.
Yeah.
It's just so immersive, and the ideas that the artists bring to this place, if you haven't been, it's this experience where you walk into this giant building and everything you see and touch is art, and it tells a story, which I love doing in my work too. Like, narrative is usually pretty important, and yeah, I would say it's almost so overwhelming, like you can't just go there for a couple hours. You really have to just experience it over a longer period.
I agree. I have.
Yeah.
And okay, I was blown away, and I spent 6 hours in there.
Yeah.
6 hours. There was one. Wow. I don't know if this one was there when you went. Do they change out their scenarios and their stories?
I don't know. It seems so permanent that they must be able to change little things here and there, I would imagine.
Well, I came around the corner into this one room, and there was a harp, but the harp was not a harp like you and I think of a harp. The strings of the harp were red laser beams, vertical, up and down.
Yeah.
And when you when you pass your finger through the red laser beam, it strikes a note, and you hear it
uh-huh.
in a wonderful sound system in this little cubby where this is. And I was just absolutely gobsmacked, entranced by this thing. I stood there for 10 or 20 minutes, I felt kind of guilty because I was hogging the thing. I wouldn't let anybody near it, you know. But, you know, just playing tunes just by passing my fingers through these red laser mm-hmm. beams. And I was so entranced. And at one point, I looked over and there was this little 5-year-old girl looking up at me just with the most amazing look on her face. And I said to her, "Yes, adults can have fun too." And she laughed.
That's
and
so
her,
cool.
Her mother laughed too. And it kind of encapsulated the experience for me because, like you said, it's immersive and it's interactive. It's not like mm-hmm. going to a gallery and looking at the art on the wall. You're actually a part of it. It's a mind-blowing thing.
Mm-hmm. We got to go there as part of a staff retreat maybe 3 years ago.
Oh, cool.
And I was so excited to go, and I really hope I can go back someday.
Yeah. I imagine it's a cornucopia of images and ideas for artists like you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think in my artist statement, I said Instead, I wanted to move there. We basically played hide-and-go-seek with the staff.
Oh, cool.
And it was the most fun I've had in a long time.
Yeah. I can't wait to see the Denver version, if and when it happens.
Oh, yeah.
I hope COVID doesn't derail that plan. And the last thing I wanted to mention before I let you go, Brian, was your comic strip in the Soper Sun. It's called The Unparalleled Universe. I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about that.
Sure. I haven't made that many comic strips before this, on my own anyway. And Will Grandbois approached me, actually, kind of right as COVID hit, asking me if I was going to have more or less time on my schedule. And would I be willing to put out a weekly comic strip? And at first, it was just kind of my wacky ideas, and gradually it's kind of transformed into more political leanings, which I think are important in this day and age, especially what is coming up on November 3rd. And it's just been a really cool experience for me to get to distill my thoughts every week of what's happened in the world and in our country and try and put something out there that's maybe not poignant, but can kind of at least get a chuckle, if not a head scratch from the community. And I feel like everyone I've talked to has been pretty positive, and I'm hopeful that most people feel that way.
Does it help to have a deadline?
It always helps to have a deadline.
Yeah, really? Yes. Is it that way with your art, too? Your own art?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's another show that's opening this week at the Red Brick, and I can't believe it. It was also happening. It was supposed to happen in June, but they postponed it to September, right, as this other show is happening at the launch pad. So the past 10 days, I've been painting like a crazy person on 14 watercolor portraits of people in the community I feel are resilient, which is the title of this show, Resilience.
Well, Brian Colley,
deadlines are great.
Brian, I salute your resilience. I salute your art. I salute your glimpse at death and triumphing with really memorable artwork. Maybe not death, but at least, you know, at least you didn't have to do brain surgery, for God's sake.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. What a relief.
Yeah, I can just imagine.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Luke. I really appreciate all the time and effort you go into these interviews. It's amazing. Come into the gallery and do all your research. What a guy.
Well, you know what? You know why I do it is because you deserve it.
Ah.
You deserve that. I mean, no, I don't know if I've said this ever to any of you artists, but you know, all of you inevitably comment on that. And it suddenly crystallized in my mind just now. The reason is because of you guys. It's not because of the way I do things. It's like, it's a gesture of respect towards you. Otherwise, we're just kind of, you know, throwing words out and meaningless words, you know. So anyway, I don't know why that came up, but I'm glad it did because, you know, it's really interesting. I'm just always, and I don't have to tell you this, I'm sure you know it, this town is full of interesting, aware, articulate, intelligent, artistic people. And what a pleasure it is to bring you guys to the airwaves on KDNK.
Oh, thanks, Luke. Yeah, we really appreciate it. Huh. Yeah, we really do.
Well, I guess you better get to work. Get to work. You've got that you've got that deadline, so you better go snap to it.
Definitely deadline for a little time. Yeah.
Hey, Brian.
Awesome. Thanks, Luke.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks a lot.